This is Spectrum.
Alternative medicine, homeopathy, secret society, hypnosis, the paranormal, alternative energy, UFO abduction, the weird, the wild, and the wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. I'm Scott Jordan, here my co-host, Tom Theophanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. What do we got tonight?
Tonight's guest is Dr. Brian O'Leary. He has such an extensive list of accolades that it will take me a long time to go through them, so I'm going to give you a short version of them. He's an author, a scientist, a former astronaut, and an international speaker. He has taught as an assistant professor of astronomy at Cornell University alongside Carl Sagan. He has published over 100 technical papers in the peer-reviewed scientific literature and another 100 popular magazine and op-ed pieces worldwide. He has appeared frequently on American national television and radio, including The Today Show, Larry King Live, The Donahue Show, and Art Bell Show. Over the past 20 years, Dr. O'Leary has researched, lectured, and written extensively about the new paradigms of science and global transformation. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Brian.
Hi, Scott. Hi, Tom.
How you doing? I think what I'd like to start out with is a little bit of history. Maybe talk about where you started in the early days and then work it up to today.
Well, yes, I was brought up in a time, I'm now 71 years old, so I was born in 1940, and during the 50s and 60s, I just had this huge interest in space. I wanted to go into space, I wanted to go to the moon, go to Mars. Everybody thought I was crazy because most of this was before Sputnik. And when Sputnik went up in 1957, I really got into my ambition to become an astronaut, to become a scientist, which I did. I became a scientist and I became an astronaut in 1967, appointed to go to Mars after I'd completed a PhD thesis about Mars. And then the U.S. got involved in Vietnam, and that was the beginning of my disillusionment. Disillusionment with the priorities of what the government is spending money on, the enormous power of vested interests. So little by little through the years, and I had a number of academic appointments in various astronomy and physics departments, Cornell, Princeton, and a number of other places during the 60s and 70s. It occurred to me toward 1980 that none of them were really working. And so I had to do some deep soul-searching about why. And the answer I came up with was that the science that I was getting increasingly interested in was heretical from the point of view of the traditional mainstream academic world. And so around the late 70s, early 80s, I got more and more involved in some of the sciences of consciousness, of healing, of the possibility of creating energy from the vacuum, creating energy from water, and purifying water through positive intention, and on it went. And around that time, I left Princeton, and I was on my own. It was kind of a rude awakening because I had kids to send to college, and I was doing stuff that was just plain heretical. So during the 80s and 90s, I began to establish myself as an alternative scientist. And in the late 80s, starting then, I convened a number of conferences that we had, some in Estes Park, Colorado. This was through the offices of the International Association for New Science, which I was one of the co-founders and board members. And so during the 90s, we held a number of meetings, very important and crucial meetings, and one of them was on the subject of free energy or energy research and development that goes outside of the box of normal thinking and promises a future of breakthrough clean energy. And so that's sort of the history. But now we're at this incredible crossroads with what's happening in Japan with their nuclear disasters, what has been happening with the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, but also further back here in Ecuador where I live, Chevron Texaco left behind a huge mess in the Amazon jungle, killing thousands of people, permanently causing diseases because of the polluted water supply from the extraction of oil. So you add up all of these things, and there now is more than ever a tremendous groundswell of potential, if we only acknowledge it, to develop any one of several being researched clean breakthrough energy sources. So I've been kind of in the lead of that effort. I'm living in Ecuador now, and one reason for living in Ecuador is because it's less dangerous. There's been a lot of suppression, as your listeners, I'm sure, heard from Wade Frazier. Mm-hmm. A lot of suppression of this research, which promises clean energy for the huge future of humanity. And my God, the fact that the people aren't even acknowledging it, even people in the green movement, is just a shock to me, and it keeps me plenty busy, attempting to express the urgency of having an Apollo type of program to research and develop clean energy sources.
Right. So in your years, you traveled, didn't you? You traveled around the world talking to people who had alternative energy ideas and concepts and working models and lab experiments. What did you find in that time?
That search was really life-changing for me because initially, like almost everybody, I was skeptical about the possibility that we could have basically free and clean energy that comes from the vacuum of space, that this was too science fiction-y. The mainstream scientists that I had rubbed elbows with most of my life clearly thought it was just a ridiculous idea and just way out there and not even worth thinking about. And my travels, and it was mostly late 80s, early 90s, was all over the world, and I visited many of the best and brightest inventors, people like John Hutchison from Canada, Troy Reed in the U.S., Shuji Inamata from Japan, Paramahamsa Tiwari in India, and many of these people had basically research devices that showed proofs of concept of some of these technologies. So it occurred to me at that point that not only was this something that should be pursued and not suppressed, but that it's something that is absolutely essential for our global energy future. But it also has to be very responsibly implemented. And this is my greatest concern because, well, we now are learning more and more about the nuclear power story and how it promised to be this free and clean and cheap energy source back in the 50s after World War II, that this was going to be the answer to electricity generation. But now we can see the enormous dangers of that technology. So it's a process of elimination, basically, that I've been going through as a scientist, investigating each traditional energy source, whether it be any of the fossil fuels, coal, oil, or natural gas, or whether it be nuclear power, or whether it be hydropower, or solar, or wind power. If you go down the list of the alternatives that are now available, none of them I I hate to say, is going to cut it. It's just too many problems with each one. Mm-hmm. Even solar and wind. I mean, God bless the solar and wind people. I love the idea. But the problem is that the materials used for windmills and solar collectors would be so expensive to replace what we now use, which is almost all hydrocarbons or fossil fuels and nuclear energy. It's just not going to cut it, I'm sorry to say. I wish it were. Right. But the fact that it isn't means this forces us into wanting to develop other alternatives. And so the other alternatives became very, very clear to me, both theoretically and experimentally, as a very real thing, but something that needs to be much further researched and understood by more people as a team effort. And that's the kind of thing I'd like to see happen. Right now, the people in this field, the researchers, are divided and ruled and suppressed and lead very, very dangerous lives because the powers that be simply don't want this to happen. It just upsets their vested interest too much.
What country do you find is the most open to this sort of technology? You've traveled around quite a bit. Have you seen sort of where the most open area for this sort of thing? Because, they're called the global elite for a reason. They have global control. But do you see any other country out there in all of your travels that it's possible?
Well, that's the conundrum we're in, and I'm sure you remember how Wade described the conundrum, which is that, my answer is no. I don't know of any country that is even aware of the possibility here, let alone wants to do it, besides maybe some of the black budgets, which, we don't know about or are not supposed to know about. So it's something which has been almost thoroughly suppressed at all levels and in all places. So I'm in Latin America now, and we're attempting to stir up interest here, but it's a long, slow process to educate some of the governments here. However, there is more openness here than there is, let's say, in the U.S., which has almost been totally suppressed.
Do you think of the coal fusion with Rossi down in Europe there?
Well, coal fusion is just one of the new energy technologies, and it's one of the more promising ones. And I can describe that a bit to your listeners as to what it is and what happened there. But in 1989, two University of Utah chemists, electrochemists, Martin Fleshman and Stanley Pons, did a tabletop experiment in which they were able to create, through a special apparatus, what appeared to be non-radioactive nuclear reactions that occurred at room temperature in a tabletop experiment, which was really quite remarkable. It used a palladium catalyst in the presence of heavy water solution, and it produced more energy, thermal energy, than went into it as measured by traditional means. So that discovery led to a number of other confirmations that, even though in the popular press people get the impression that it's a stillbirth, that it doesn't work, that it's a fraud, well, that's ridiculous. It isn't at all. In fact, there are many successful cold fusion experiments going on right now in a number of laboratories all around the world, and there is a whole field built around it, annual conferences, a whole science that's built around the concept. But it's still being avoided by the mainstream culture. But cold fusion is just one of the technologies. There are several others as well.
The big one that's making a splash now is Rossi and Fuccardi in the in Italy. They're making a big splash now with their the work they're doing in cold fusion.
I don't know if were you aware that about a week ago they made a claim that they had a unit working in a Greek factory. and for about a month, and it worked tremendously well, and they were now thinking that they can go into a commercial use within the next year.
Well, I'm very encouraged by that news, and we hear, not that I you know, let's hope that it works. See, here's the problem, and this is what people don't really realize. It's like on this technology, the Wright brothers have already flown. The original days of proof of concept, which the Wright brothers very clearly demonstrated in their initial airplane, was met with such great skepticism that it took years before their achievements were recognized and you could actually get the commercial, or shall we say, just practical side of it implemented. The Wrights had a really rough time. They died poor. They Scientific American wrote a scathing editorial 2 years after they first flew that that aviation was a fraud. Mm-hmm. And the same thing is going on with cold fusion and some of the other energy sources. So we get news about this person doing this or this person having that breakthrough, and we're on the verge of commercializing it. The word I prefer to use to commercialize is just implement, because by its very nature, this energy is free. We all deserve to have it, albeit in small packages, because it is decentralized as well. The point here being that I just encourage any and every inventor to just move forward on this. And part of my job is to coordinate the inventors and see if we can come together. And for that, of course, one needs quite a bit of funding. But the people with lots of money tend to be in another universe when it comes to that. So
yeah.
we're kind of poised conceptually to really make some breakthroughs and bring people together and not have people also wait in their own competitive compartment, wait for the day when they can beat somebody else to the punch. I mean, this is too important for capitalism. We have to get moving on this, and the fact is that most people are not even aware of its possibility.
Yeah, that's a problem. Wade was talking about, called it scaling the walls of the free energy paradigm, and that it's not only is there a castle with a moat, there's also a minefield. And one of the first traps that the people fall into is getting a patent. Well, getting a patent is just like painting a bullseye on your forehead, you know, or submitting for a patent. Is, you know, it puts a flag out that you're working in that area. I mean, it's just, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, and there is a growing consensus, that the patent process is so corrupted that it people just shouldn't do that anymore. This is for the Earth. It's not for personal gain. So people need to, that are involved in this research need to give it away, basically.
Yeah, so it's a good idea, but they're using an old paradigm, and they should shoot more towards the open source sort of way of doing things.
Absolutely, absolutely. At least the initial parts of it, because obviously there will be many technologies that will spin off from this. In a way, it's very similar to the information technology development. And we're in the very early years of this development, where the skepticism and denial still runs very, very high, but where there's a huge potential, and where it's very clear we're going to have to have clean energy. And anybody with any bit of intelligence can see for themselves just the enormous dangers posed by continuing to depend on hydrocarbons and uranium as our principal fuel sources.
Yeah, Japan. I mean, that's just a... Have you been following that?
Oh, you betcha. And it's a cliffhanger. And I'm not very optimistic. Even if they squeeze through this one with a minimum of death and damage, it still sends up a red flag. And it's a flag that I'm very familiar with because in 1975, when he ran for president, Morris Udall, he was an environmental congressman, I was his energy advisor, and the big issue then was nuclear energy. And the nuclear lobby wanted to build like 1,000 nuclear power plants in the U.S. by the year 2000. We were able to, through our congressional committee, stop that in its tracks. So now, instead of 1,000 nuclear power plants in the U.S., it's more like 100. Okay. And very roughly, I forget the exact number. I think it's a little more than that now. But the point here being that nuclear power plants are very unsafe by their very nature. We now know just in spades, even though these calculations had been done in the past, that any place that's earthquake-prone or tsunami-prone is not where to build a nuclear power plant. And yet they went ahead and did exactly that. And they also did a number of very, very fundamental mistakes, like leaving spent fuel rods in an open pool. Right. And now that they're dealing with those problems, which could be much more serious than we have first anticipated, in part because some of these fuel rods use plutonium, which is the most toxic of all the radioactive elements. Mm.
To think that we could have been beyond this, I mean, the free energy thing's been going on for a long time. So is the anti-gravity research. I remember Bedini being on Open Minds radio, and that was 15 years ago, and they were talking about it being just around the corner, that any day now that we're going to all have free energy, and there's absolutely nothing the powers that be can do. Well, guess what?
The powers that be are much more powerful than we've given them credit for when it comes to stuff like this, because it's so easy for the powers that be to go into a laboratory and sabotage it, and that's what has happened so often. So many horror stories. And it's been now over 100 years since the time of Nikola Tesla and Henry Moray and others. That we've had many, many brilliant inventors come along with a breakthrough free energy source, just to be later suppressed. And this has been such a horrible record. It's something which people need to become more aware of, even people that are skeptical, because at least the skeptic can spend some time investigating the possibility of this. And even if we don't have a commercial device now, which I assert is primarily because of the suppression, it could be developed if we allow ourselves to transparently fund the research and development effort and bring people together in protected research and development centers. And then we could have another Apollo program, an Apollo program for free energy.
Can you imagine where this world would be right now if J.P. Morgan, instead of saying, where do I put the meter on that, said, sure, let's do it?
Well, we'd have a very different world. And the only thing I caution in all of this, of course, is that there are so many new energy technologies, so many, of which cold fusion is one, the so-called zero-point energy, sometimes it's called vacuum energy, is another of some of the very special water and hydrogen chemistries. And these all lead to the same destination, which is energy that is basically free. And the only problem with that I see about moving ahead with this is that our leaders have become so irresponsible and so corrupted by the dirty energy that we're now using. I'm very concerned that they're going to miscarry this one too. And so people need to become aware and awake. And part of that, I'm involved now in an effort, kind of a last-ditch effort, to create groups that can come together and propose new sovereign governance systems that would make sure we can go ahead and develop this in spite of the huge, huge suppression effort that's been underway for 100 years.
And how is that working out?
Well, you have to start somewhere, right? And I've been dealing with or working some with another radio interviewer. His name is David Gibbons, G-I-B-B-O-N-S, okay. Who is working with me on creating some of these concepts. Some of these ideas are posted on my website. I've thought about it for a long time because I began to realize that the disconnect between what's possible and what people are actually doing is so huge that we have to bridge that gap. We have to be able to research these things and have that research supported. The people doing this work are the real unsung heroes of our time. They're people that will go into history as, I think, the truly great people, but the ones that have gone against the grain. And, of course, this has happened throughout history.
Right. I see one of two ways this can happen, and I like your way better. The one way would be for the powers that be to grab all their toys from their underground bases, the anti-gravity and the free energy, and pull them out to the surface, give them out to everybody and say, here you go. We've been suppressing this, but we figure it's time. We'll give everybody this technology. That's option A. Option B, I'm going to go with what you're saying. What do you think the chances are there?
Well, I just don't know because, you know, this is we're plowing new ground. We've seen this suppression happen. We've seen the feasibility of many, many of these potential sources. So that's an observation that's very clearly established.
Right.
And so we have to do something new, something different. Mm. Well, one way to do it is to just get the word out so much where enough people are educated about the possibility that we insist upon it. Well, just like some of the recent democratic movements that have been going on in the Middle East and Wisconsin and other places, people are getting fed up with what's happening now. And clearly, it's across the board. It's not only in terms of dirty energy, but fighting wars and using genetically engineered organisms and so forth and so on. We're creating this artificial world that's just falling apart unless we do something radical soon. And we have to insist on that. And that's the effort that needs to be made now.
Well, we're sorry, but we got to take a quick break right now. And we'll see you guys on the other side.
Are you suffering from constant pain in the knee, shoulder, wrist, and other parts of your body? Needle-free acupuncture with Lapingo Life Pads may be the answer. Lapingo Life Pads combine ancient wisdom with modern nanotechnology and advanced engineering. They're designed to relieve pain naturally with no needles and no side effects. That's Lepingo. LaPingoProducts.com.
Hello, this is Scott Jordan, and I would personally like to thank all of our listeners for their emails of encouragement. It means a great deal to us. All of Spectrum shows are available in two formats, an MP3 stream you can listen to on our site, as well as a YouTube version. All of Spectrum shows are full-length and free to listen to, and if I have my way, always will be. Tom and myself do all this work out of pocket, and freely give our time and effort to giving you, the listener, the best, most informative experience possible. I would also like to thank our listeners who have donated in the past to help with our expenses. Every donation goes directly to keeping the project alive. Thank you, enjoy, and keep listening.
You've always been told to think about the alternative. Well, we can do better. We can show you. AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com will improve your health, well-being, and lifestyle through hundreds of different products, from herbs and well-being products to our large selection of specialty clothing, jewelry, and more. We ship around the world with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. There's always new products and amazing specials. Let us show you at AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com.
Brian, do you really think now, from a realistic point of view, if, you know, somebody came out and gave this free energy for the you know, people of the world, how is that going to change the economy of the world?
Well, the word economy is sometimes called the dismal science. It's a human created system that is part of the problem rather than part of the solution. So I tend to not want to look at the economy as much as the ecology, because it's the natural ecology of the earth that is being destroyed by our very dirty practices. And so that's first and foremost. We have to insist that we develop clean technologies and not dirty technologies, technologies that work with nature rather than against nature. And those technologies are, by and large, suppressed because the powers that be want to keep their power. And if you really look at this just physically, not economically, you see just what a dreadful system that humans have created that are destroying nature and ourselves. And so what we have to do is make the economy fit the ecology, not the other way around. And now there are certainly a lot of ideas out there, good ones, about what to do about the economy. One of them is not to be hooked on growth anymore. Growth is part of what's ruining the world, because people, when they tend to go in a new venture, they externalize their costs. In other words, go for the resources, go pollute, do whatever you want there. And that's been the standard that has existed in our economic systems right up until now. That has to change. So you see, what I'm talking about here is a huge sea change in the global culture. The development of clean, breakthrough, decentralized, safe, publicly transparent energy, that prospect could change things overnight. We could have heaven on earth, as Wade sometimes says, if only we allow it to happen. But the people need to become aware of it. Now, people like Wade and I, with our decades of experience, know that it's possible. Some people might be skeptical that it isn't possible. Well, you can only find out by trying. And my world travels back in the late 80s, early 90s, really was an eye-opener for me, because I, as a scientist, trained scientist, could see for myself that these things are possible. And that then led to the obvious conclusion that we need to research and develop these sources as soon as possible and come together and insist that this happen, and to make sure that this research is protected from the powers that be. The powers that be have really screwed up things badly, and now we have to do something about it.
Well, since we are in that sort of a conundrum right now, and countries like, you know, the oil-rich countries right now, what would happen if we all of a sudden didn't need oil? What would happen to those countries? How would they survive, and how would that change you know, their thinking, or you know, what would they do?
Well, it's paradigm shift time. You see, the problems are not technical; they're mostly social and political.
Oh yeah,
a lot of people do just fine if they just rely on their own local community, their local resources. There certainly can be a number of transition scenarios planned where you don't suddenly shut off the spigot. You phase it out while you phase in the new, and you carefully design those social systems and governments around that rather than the other way around. See, we have to get out of the old paradigm totally. And that is a tall order for many people. They just rather stick with what's familiar. But the day will come when we'll be running our cars, we'll be getting our electricity, probably from tiny little solid-state devices that could be put in your circuit breaker box or under the hood of your car. That can only help the economy, at least a new paradigm economy, because then the energy sector suddenly becomes free or close to free compared to what it's been up until now, which is a huge percentage of the global economy is vested in polluting energy sources. That's right. Got to change. And the other big biggie, of course, are the weapons of war, plus unsustainable agriculture, the resource grab that's going on in the third world, the economic dependence of the poorer countries on the wealthier ones, the financial manipulations of the culture, the Goldman Sachs's of the world that rely on business as usual so that they can make even more money. This is just unmitigated greed, and it needs to stop if we're going to survive these times.
Right. Now, do you think this situation happening now with the coal fusion, as we mentioned earlier, since the Greek government now, you know, has taken it upon themselves to look more into it and do the testing, a country like Greece being in a terrible financial situation that they have been in the last little while, is it possible that this thing can become a reality now because of it?
Well, I can only hope so. I've heard so many stories like this that never came to fruition, and that doesn't mean that this one could break through. I'm sure there's obviously a huge pressure on the Greek government not to do this, and with all sorts of threatened reprisals. So it's a matter of moving ahead anyway. You do it anyway. And certainly I'm about to take a trip and talk with a number of government people in Ecuador and in Costa Rica, and there are other places too that might accept this possibility. The only thing is that when you run these things up the flag to the powers that be, then there are very serious repercussions. So the powers that be are going to have to either fall under their own weight or just let go of this one. Mm-hmm. But it just means more and more people need to become aware. That's one reason why I'm on this show, is so that people can become more aware. And if they are skeptical, to do the research, it's the information is out there. There are all kinds of technologies, any one or some of which could do the job.
Right.
How do we get like a lot of people on a global scale to sort of stand up and create this movement?
Well, it's public sharing, that's for sure. Now, I've been bounced from the mainstream media time and time again about this. One time the BBC was approaching me saying that they were going to be doing a special on new energy sources, and they wanted to interview me, and I said, fine. Well, they ran it up to the executive producer, and he said no. And this is what happens. There's naysaying at every higher level. So it's got to be more the people, just the common, ordinary, everyday people, but also the scientists. Many scientists, like myself, I had to make a clean break from mainstream science in order to be able to do this work at all. So we have been divided and ruled, and this has happened throughout history, by the way. And the Green Movement, likewise, people in the Green Movement are very, very effective at describing what isn't working. Obviously, the anti-nuclear lobby will now be very, very emboldened by what's been happening in Japan, just like the anti-fossil fuel groups when the BP oil spill happened, and there's even more climate change indications going on in the acidification of the oceans and so forth. And we know that burning carbon is bad for our health, bad for the environment. All of these things collectively, if we tend to connect the dots and look at the big picture, we see that all of these alternatives are just pathetically, they fall way short of what we really need to do. So this information needs to get out there as widely as possible. And unfortunately, back in the old days, of course, I had no problem getting on CNN or BBC or any of the other major media sources, but they very clearly have censored this one.
Okay. So if you were to talk about being a doctor of astrophysics and a former astronaut for NASA, being the first man chosen to go to Mars, and they would get you on to talk about a range of subjects, but as soon as you start talking about free energy and sustainable future, that's it. You're done.
Exactly. That's right. That's okay. Right. And that's the risk. And I think anybody in this field knows that. I'd say there are on the planet maybe several hundred of us. Some people are inventors. In my case, I'm more like an elder who expresses the bigger picture and sees what's happening and tries to do something about it. Collectively, we're all aware of the fact that we will be blackballed. We have been blackballed as a result of doing this work.
And have you butt heads with the mainstream science?
Yes.
Find they come after you?
Well, sometimes, or they just ignore me. More often than not, it's ignoring. I clearly have not, never been invited back to Princeton. I've never given a colloquium or seminar on the topic, even though I could have. Although I have made various university appearances, that's generally the whole student body. But right. Basically, you see, what's happening is the scientific community tends to be the most conservative, and a lot of them have to depend on their funding from government sources or from private industry, which are locked up in vested financial power. And so these people are not going to want to jump ship like I did. If they did jump ship, they realize they'd lose their grants, they'd probably lose their career, in quotes, they'd lose a lot. And I had to go through that process myself. I had kids to put through college while I was freelancing, while I was going around and giving talks and selling books just to get through this period. So, right. Yeah, it's highly risky from that point of view, but from the point of view of bringing in the new paradigm, it's becoming almost absolutely essential to take the courage to jump ship. So the scientific community have been part of the suppressors of this by naysaying the possibility that we could have this new energy technology. Another group are the environmentalists, the Greens. They tend to be skeptical of any technology, whether it's clean or dirty, because they're quite right in saying that what's been adopted so far at the trillion-dollar level has been just utterly devastating, whether it's the use of hydrocarbons or nuclear power or the weapons of war or the financial robbery of Wall Street. They're all up around the trillion or more dollar level. And when you get to that level, it's just become so corrupted that you have to jump ship from it and develop a whole new paradigm, which means a huge cultural change. And that's what I foresee. And as long as I'm in this body and on this planet, I'd really like to encourage people to give this some consideration. But the Greens, the Green movement itself has fallen far short. And believe me, I've tried. I've had many discussions with various leaders of the Green movement that decry our dirty energy use, but don't want to make the leap toward the possibility that we could have radically new breakthrough clean energy sources.
Now, that surprises me a little bit. You would think, I mean, they're great at doing the anti stuff. We're anti this, we're anti that, we're anti this. But you're coming along with a pro approach. How about being pro free energy? How about being pro, you know, using hydrogen for fuel or, you know, water?
Well, this is the conundrum.
And, that's strange. And
Wade has addressed this issue, I think, very deeply on his wonderful website. I've addressed it on my website and my books, and it's a conundrum, and it's a reality. The Green movement simply, as a whole, and most all of its leaders, don't even want to talk with me, even though prior to my getting into this field, they did talk with me. As long as I was thinking conventionally, I could have a conversation with them. As soon as I got into this, I was invited on to various shows, uninvited, invited to give seminars, uninvited, when they found out that I was an advocate of the possibility of free energy. But that's what happens.
That's so odd.
The Green movement then isn't doing it, and there are some social theories about why the Green movement isn't doing it, in part because they've developed their own vested interests, whether it's solar power or wind power or some more conventional approach to some of these questions. That's one reason. Another is explained by the model of spiral dynamics, which is a model of psychology and sociology that asserts that when people move to a certain point of view or worldview, then they get stuck in it. And the Green movement in and of itself is not going to do it. We know that since the time Ronald Reagan was elected president of the U.S. in 1980, the world has not embraced any significant new ideas, nor has the environmental movement been effective at all. They might win a few skirmishes here and there, but the big picture keeps getting worse and worse and worse.
Right.
Many of the environmental groups are bought out. Some of them are funded by oil companies. And these are just facts that can be easily researched. So it's the scientists, the Green movement, and the political progressives. I'm a political progressive. I don't want the Tea Partiers to take over the country. And I think Obama's doing an abysmal job, maybe because he's marching to somebody's orders, probably because he is, and at gunpoint, to perpetuate this military, industrial, polluting energy, financial empire that is antithetical to anything human and anything that could be. So you have the political progressives, you have and other political progressive leaders, I've talked with many of them, are shy to do this, in part because they're funded. Their funding mostly comes from existing powers, corporations, and so forth. So it's the system is locked up. Even the people that you would think would be greener, more progressive, and more scientifically mature, they haven't gotten there yet. So yeah. in the spiral dynamics model, Ken Wilber and others have, I think, very articulately said that, well, this is because the Greens are not integrating their knowledge yet. Mm. They are just fighting little individual battles and losing most of them. But the big picture is in connecting the dots and integrating to a second tier of awareness. which is a more holistic view of life. It's more, has to do with consciousness. It has to do with spiritual growth, more understanding of reality, and certainly a very important part of that is developing clean energy, very important part.
Yeah.
And that then requires a degree of sentience. Wade talks about that too, a degree of sentience and awareness that goes beyond what's now out there in the public domain.
Mm. I agree. I'd say there's many levels to this. Just as far as the greens go, when I think of the green movement, I think of money, the color of money. And my whole thing is just basically bought and they're bought and paid for. And I tell a little story, and my story goes like this. If they get to a certain size, any green movement, any sort of, then you have somebody show up with a big bunch of money. And they'll say, we want to give you this money. We think you're doing a great thing here with what you're doing. And the only thing is we need one guy on the board to help distribute the money, look after the money. And they say, okay, great. Some time will go by. They'll come up with some more money, but we need two more guys on the board just to make sure the money's distributed correctly. And before you know it, none of the original board's left. And the powers that be are running the place. Now, that may be a simplistic example, but, you know, it just goes to show you how this sort of stuff can be taken over.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I've personally had that experience actually several times. I've co-founded a couple of organizations that where the board was taken over by others. I quite naively appointed a good-sized board, and then they took over, pushed me out. It's just the old paradigm politics just keeps going on, and that's one very big reason why the green movement is so ineffectual right now. It's money. Yeah. Money is everything, and that needs to be changed too, where money is more just used as a medium of exchange and not an excuse for somebody to manipulate others and get more of it at others' expenses, which is what's going on now.
I often wonder if there's other civilizations out there when explained the concept of money, they just shake their head and go, okay, that's odd.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You got it. Yeah, absolutely. That's odd. Because, I mean, just to observe the earth and see what's happening in Japan, for example, I mean, it's all about money. It's all about vested industry, huge corporations cutting corners, cutting expenses so that they can receive more money in the short term.
Couldn't they have poured concrete on it day one?
Well, yeah, I suppose that's one way to do it.
The Chernobyl, answer. Pour concrete on it.
That's right. Well, that's true of the reactors. It seems like this emergency is quite different in the sense that there are reactor vessels, all right. Maybe they will pour concrete. We'll see. But the other problem are the cooling ponds that have highly radioactive plutonium and cesium-137, very radioactive.
The spent rods.
Rods, yeah.
That should have been moved off-site.
Exactly.
Right. And also one of the reactors was being worked on, and while they were working on that reactor, instead of removing those rods that were not spent off-site, they put them in the pools.
Exactly.
That's a mistake. That's huge.
Huge mistake.
Huge.
Yeah, human error is the biggie here. It's not, I mean, the plants shouldn't have been built in the first place because we didn't even need nuclear power. That's one thing right there. But even if they were built, obviously they could have built it away from where you could have earthquakes and tsunamis.
Okay.
But also, were they not built in the 70s when the, you know, there was a different ideas and thoughts of how to build them?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch the question.
No, I said the Japanese power plants were built in the 70s, according to what the news people were saying. And the ideas and approaches that they had back in those days are quite different to today.
That's correct, yeah. That's, you know, a finer point, but well worth mentioning. And by the way, the same thing happened here regarding oil drilling in the Amazon jungle here in Ecuador, which has been going on now for about 30 years, ever since the 70s. Oil companies have come in and basically decimated the Ecuadorian Amazon jungle, which is the most biodiverse spot on Earth, with voluntarily isolated indigenous peoples. And Chevron Texaco came in the 1970s, and they just threw the toxic waste of oil, the oil that didn't get to the refinery, and all the other chemicals went into the water supply and killed thousands of people. Well, these people came up with a lawsuit against Chevron, for which there was just a judgment for $8 billion for Chevron to pay the community to clean up the mess. The mess is still there, and people are still dying in that area. And yet, Chevron just very cavalierly says, oh, well, this isn't our jurisdiction. No, we're not going to pay this. So that's going on, and then, of course, BP in the Gulf of Mexico went in there and had this disaster, this explosion, and a huge oil gusher in the Gulf of Mexico, and then they put in this dangerous chemical called Corexit, which is now killing people once again, and BP is pretty much pulled out. They're not really taking responsibility. So these are patterns that have been set up for a long time. But are now being shown to us in spades that this is not the way to do things. It's not the way we're just going to have to do it differently.
We're getting example after example after example of how not to do things.
Exactly. You got it. Absolutely.
You know, and eventually if we, you know, you're going to get tired of getting hit in the back of the head with a 2x4 and say, all right, okay, I'll stop. I don't know if the human race can do that. It depends. On a good day, I think they can. On a bad day, I'm not so sure.
I don't think we have the brains for that yet. Old style.
There's something about human nature which blocks positive possibilities. And I don't understand it because I'm not in that ballpark in that grouping, which is almost everybody, that people will complain about what's bad, and then when it's no longer on the front page, they'll go on to the next, almost forgetting what happened before.
It's a constant thing, you know, people forget, like, whatever it's in the news today, if it's gone tomorrow, you know, people go on and about their lives, they forget all about it. Nothing sticks. That's the biggest problem. And if it doesn't affect you directly, you know, people don't care. You know, they just news temporarily, and then it just goes on. You know, and I mean, look, news were going crazy on Libya, right? As soon as the disaster happened in Japan, everybody went to Japan. Hardly anybody's talking about Libya. You know, terrible things are going on over there right now, and yet nobody cares because now everybody's looking at Japan. You know, and it's all temporary. People have very short memories.
Yeah. People have short memories, and they also, most people are really distracted. They're so busy doing what they're doing that they can't see the forest from the trees. And so, but my hope is that humanity's humanity in the positive way will come out more now, and people will clearly kind of get it that we have to do things very differently, and we have to insist on that. And that we have to go ahead and do it anyway, regardless of what the powers that be say or do.
Have you ever found any pressure? Have you ever had to sort of back away from the free energy movement for a little while? Have you ever run into it where it's just gotten too hot to be in the pan?
Huh. Well, because some of the key people that I'm referring to here or about to refer to are still alive and very well, yes, I've had a couple of instances because I've been a leader in this field now for a fairly long time. You know, they'll infiltrate any organization, and they have an agenda. And they go in and they steal people's equipment. They assassinate, they threaten, they bribe.
Right. And
that's just a fact. It's just what's been happening. And people are so dumbed down that they're not aware that that's happening, as well as the huge potential of these new energy sources.
Mm-hmm. There's got to be white hats. If there's black hats, meaning, you know, the bad guys, there's got to be white hats that have a lot of money and access to technology. And do you believe in that paradigm?
There are white hats out there, but I don't think even, at least so far, the white hats with a lot of money haven't come to the table for whatever reason. And again, I think Wade and I both talk about this, is that some of it is just the educational process, that a person wearing a white hat may still not get that this possibility is so very important.
Okay. Do you think that there is technology in underground bases or hidden anywhere in the world that is available right now, fully functional? What's your opinion on that? Do you think that exists or does it not exist?
It might, and of course the fact that if it did exist, and I suspect it does, you know, certainly we're aware of some experiments going on or having gone on in Area 51 near Las Vegas, underground work on anti-gravity, and and there are those indications, some of the UFO type technologies. These are all, I think, very real manifestations of attempts of the black ops people to replicate some of these advanced technologies and develop them for their own use, but not to be shared with the public.
Their own selfish use, yeah.
Yeah, it's very selfish to keep these things secret, to keep it away from people while people are suffering and dying. Whether there is an agenda which is much more malicious and malevolent, I can only guess that there probably is. And why people have stooped to this level of power and exploitation, it's beyond me, because our beautiful planet is getting destroyed by their actions.
Right. Because generally people are kind. I don't know if Tom would agree with me. Tom?
Yeah.
Generally, I think people are kind.
Sometimes,
yeah. But most people are kind. Yeah, I agree with you. They're truly, and their human qualities come out as, especially under duress. Maybe we have to have so much duress that we just have to do this. And that seems to be part of human nature, is the pendulum now has gone so far in the direction of elitist control that now it can't help but come back, and I hope in time to avoid total catastrophe like nuclear war or some sort of environmental catastrophe that could even be bigger than the one in Japan or the one in the Gulf of Mexico. These are all things that may be on the horizon.
Right.
Our kinder, more gentle nature, we're very complex animals, and we seem to, many of us have been taken over by a kind of a collective psychosis that's preventing us from doing what we really need to do. And part of that is the just masterful public relations campaigns by some of the large corporations and governments of the world.
And TV and movies and right? All the training programs, right?
Right, right. Now, meanwhile, of course, there are places like Ecuador here in which we see a real-life Avatar. Of course, the movie Avatar was a real great smash box office hit, where the good guys were the ones who were in favor of nature and the bad guys were the exploiters and the military. That's really cool. That's fictionalized form, but it's happening right here in Ecuador in non-fiction form. There's a national park we have here called Yasuni, which is just precious. More species in one square kilometer than all of North America. This very precious place is being threatened by oil drilling, just because the oil companies can make a lot of money. The government of Ecuador gets some royalties for drilling the oil, which then helps support the government. And so everybody's kind of in this together to exploit the environment and to build roads in there, which then causes all kinds of logging to happen, deforestation. The Amazon within Ecuador will be half gone. Half of what's there now will be there in 24 years. That's less than a human generation. So that's not foresight. That's just plain dumb.
Yeah. And greedy.
And greedy.
And, you know, what it comes down to. Okay, Brian, I got a question for you. Being that you're a former astronaut, what are your thoughts on the possibility of a secret space program that the astronauts of yesteryear and today are flying around in old technology, tin cans, and if there is a secret space program, they get to play with the good toys. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are it's entirely possible. Being an outsider these days, I don't have an inner track, so I can't honestly say what's possible or what isn't, besides from the point of view of being an independent scientist. And certainly I've seen the space program deteriorate from its heydays back in the 60s when there was almost no limit to human imagination and where the military programs were basically left out. NASA's charter was, still is, that it be a civilian agency without any military applications. And yet, at the same time, we found that the military has come in there anyway, just looking at budgets and mission profiles and so forth. That's public information. And so you can glean from that any number of possibilities of cover-ups, all kinds of foul play. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that I say, well, my expertise is more in the sciences themselves, like, for example, the feasibility of free energy technologies. Right. That's something you can get your hands on, and it's something you can do something about.
Right.
Without speculating about, well, what might happen in the future, 2012, or whether this big ship or UFO or whatever it is, military installation, suddenly shows up or not, and what the astronauts are free to say and what they're not. I mean, I've had some intriguing conversations myself, private ones and ones that I just can't reveal publicly, but ones where astronauts have claimed to have seen things and mm-hmm. have silenced. So in general, that is true.
Yeah, I want to ask you about Daniel Pamela, and what do you know about him, and if you have met him?
Well, I haven't met him, but he's one of several very talented people on the planet that have special psychic powers that can literally, in his case, generate electricity. He's autistic. He's mental age is about 10 years old. He's actually in a 50-year-old body. And he can actually literally light up light bulbs or just through his presence put energy into electrical circuits. He knows how to create this energy, which in many ways is like some of the principles of so-called zero-point or free or vacuum energy, which is that energy is everywhere in the universe. Every point in time and space has an enormous potential energy field. And through consciousness or through some sort of electromagnetic device, you can tap this energy, and there are certain conditions under which that can happen, then you get basically free energy. You have a flow of electricity. So Daniel Pomerleau, who lives in Montreal, is one of those very talented people. I've met a number of others. There's, the Sai Baba, who materializes things. I visited him many times in India. Or Tomas Green Morton in Brazil, who can also create light from nothing. You can actually do this through your consciousness. And there are certain especially talented and highly evolved people that can actually do that. And in a way, it confirms the supposition that electricity needn't be generated the way we're doing it. We don't need these antiquated old grid systems. We don't need these big central station nuclear power plants or hydro plants or fossil fuel plants. We can have decentralized small devices that can produce the energy we need. And so that's what basically Wade and I are talking about. We know that because we've seen it. And we've right. seen these ideas come forward. So rather than to talk about this or that specific device, just to know that we're on the right track, but we need to have protected research and development places where people can come together, very capable people, under protection from the powers that be to develop these new energy sources.
It is the free energy area is sort of a small-ish, well, I mean, you take the population of the planet, it's a pretty small group. I think the focus would be to get it, this should be a worldwide knowledge, a worldwide phenomena. Everybody should be just, you know, talking about this. This should be common knowledge, just like if you're the vast majority of the world knows if a hunk of steel flies over top of them in aluminum, that it's a plane, and they don't need to run out and, you know, build an altar to it. You know, which is what we have now. We have a sort of a small group of fraction of humanity that know about this possibility. The vast majority don't. They just
That's
don't.
Right. That's right. And the same thing has happened throughout the history of technology and science. Bertrand Russell, the English philosopher, and this is one of my favorite quotes, said that the resistance to a new idea increases as the square of its importance. The more important the idea, the more resistance you're going to get. And if you're perceived as threatening this multi-trillion dollar per year energy infrastructure and economy, then people are going to come down on you, and they do. And that goes with the territory. But right. people now need to be courageous and intelligent enough to stand up to that. And if enough people are able to do that and insist we develop this, then it will get developed.
Yeah, it's got to happen. Eventually it has to. I mean, it has to. If for planetary evolution, we've got to get to that point. And why we're dragging our heels, I don't know. I think it's a matter of time. Personally, I think humanity is destined to be in the stars, but before they get to the stars, they better grow up and how to figure out how to live correctly on Earth.
Absolutely, and that's what shifted, in looking at my own history, shifting from my interest in outer space, it really shifted to the Earth and inner space over the course of the last three decades. I just decided to say, well, I'm sorry, folks, but we're destroying our planet so badly, we need to focus on here.
Yeah, before the planet, you know, if by some accounts, this race that's living on the planet right now is the fifth race, that there's been four races before that have come and gone. There's detectable amounts of nuclear fallout that's been found in areas of the Earth that's 50,000 years old. So we've gotten to the point of nuclear knowledge 50,000 years ago. Well, they're not here anymore, so it didn't work out too well for them. Right? So we've got to get to the point. It's either we evolve or we perish.
Well, that's the point, is regardless of what theories we might want to entertain, the fact is that we are destroying the Earth, and nature is so beautiful. That's one reason why we live way, way out in the Andes of southern Ecuador. Mm. It's beautiful here, and it's just to see the Earth being destroyed, even here, the deforestation, the pollution of the water, the chemtrails, all kinds of horrendous things are happening, even here. And this has got to stop. It's insane.
Right. You're seeing it. You went, as far away from it as you could get, and you're still being affected by it.
That's right. Exactly. Because humans are destroying the whole planet, and there are a few systemic things that pretty much can't be reversed, like the acidification of the oceans. Just the routine burning of hydrocarbons is causing the acid content of the oceans to go way up, killing all kinds of sea life. Mm. And that's unavoidable. That's even if you don't buy the human intervention theory about climate change. So many different things going on now that are just ridiculous, and it doesn't have to be that way. The technical piece is relatively easy. It's a matter of getting people together and researching. The social and political thing is the big challenge.
Right, right.
That it is.
You don't, whether you buy into one theory or another is irrelevant. The point is that we need to evolve as a species, and we need to evolve in a positive spiritual part. There's that aspect to it.
We need to do it fast because we don't have much time left. I'm afraid.
For sure.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with David Suzuki?
Yes. He's a Canadian environmentalist who has a lot of public exposure.
Yeah, he's been fighting it tooth and nail for, I don't know, decades now. And at times it looks like, he's losing the war, but he keeps going at it. So.
I don't think David's real big on free energy. He'd argue with you
about
that.
Well, it's not necessarily the free energy. It's the fact that, what we're ruining our environments, we're ruining our everything that we have, and eventually we're going to get ourselves into a irreversible situation. So,
well, this is an example. I would say David Suzuki is similar to many, many people, environmental leaders. I could rattle down names, people like Lester Brown and Emery Lovins and Richard Heinberg and Jim Hansen, leading authors and scientists in the environmental field. Are still pretty much denying and tuning out to the free energy prospects.
Well, of course, they wouldn't get any airplay. Do you think he'd get any airplay if he started doing that? None.
Probably not.
He knows who butters his bread. Don't you worry.
Yeah, but I mean, if part of the accomplishment is that, you can get something done, if that's the way you got to approach it, then yeah. I guess. That's
well, it helps.
Look at it.
Yeah, I agree. It helps. It's just nice to. This is a lonely business. What Wade and I have been doing is very lonely because there aren't very many of us out there. Because we have careers that, in my case, I'm well past retirement age, so now I can kind of just let her rip.
you still look, looking after your P's and Q's, and you have to be careful a little bit what you say. But you can pretty much go out and say what you want.
Pretty much.
You don't have to worry about getting fired.
That's true.
You're not going to lose tenure.
Nope.
Yeah. Okay. So it's been great. I'm glad we talked to you. Is there anything else you'd like to cover? What I would like to get out there is your website and any projects or talks that you're going to be doing, if you want to tell people about that.
Okay, my website is simply brianoleary.info, and it's Brian with an I, just brianoleary.info. And you'll see just a whole wealth of different presentations, mostly video, but also several essays that I post from time to time. I also have a blog, which is http://whatever, drbrianoleary.wordpress.com, but the website will get you to any of these things. And my most recent book, I've authored 11 books. My most recent book is The Energy Solution Revolution, and it's all about this topic that we've been discussing. And that's available both in printable or ebook form and can be ordered on my website.
Okay. Are there any events that you'll be speaking at that you'd like to?
I've done a lot of speaking in my life. And coming up in the near future, my answer is no.
Okay.
Not that I wouldn't do it if invited and the circumstances were right, but I am getting involved in a lot of quiet behind-the-scenes activity, smaller meetings, to try to get some of this stuff going.
Right, right. You've got your focus. You know where you're going to go. You know what you're doing.
Right, and right. And presentations actually are very easily done on Skype now, or just teleconferencing and so forth. And since I live in southern Ecuador, and since I'm not really a young whippersnapper anymore, this is where most of it's going to happen.
Hey, you know what you could do? You could do a free energy webinar with Wade and other people. Hey, there you go. I just had a thought.
Well, it would be very nice, and if somebody would set that up for me, I'd be happy to do it. I'm also working quite a bit with David Gibbons, who does a radio broadcast on the Internet, which is gaining a lot of popularity. I think he's getting over a million listeners now.
Oh, awesome. Tell us, what's the radio show?
Well, it's called, there are a number of them, In Discussion or Crossing Over the Bridge. It's davidgibbons.org, GIBBONS.org. So, and I'm appearing on various shows with a number of other people, which is good. People that we need to be working with our allies a lot more closely, people like Bill Tiller, who's a wonderful professor emeritus from Stanford, is doing breakthrough water research. And people like Nassim Harriman, who's doing basic physics research on free energy.
Have you followed his work?
A little bit. Okay. But anyway, that Ed Mitchell, who, of course, the Apollo 14 astronaut who founded the Institute of Noetic Sciences.
Yep.
I've been on a couple of programs with him. John Perkins, who wrote Confessions of an Economic Hitman. We're all kind of in this together. We all feel that it's now time to move forward with these new technologies.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show. I think it's very important that we get this information out to as many people as humanly possible. We can't just keep going on the same treadmill. It's eventually got to break. The bubble's got to break. So
absolutely. So we have to be prepared for when it breaks to come right in there with what's really going to be positive.
I agree. And thank you very much. And we'll see you guys next week.
Next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.